Well, hi, I'm Tom Evans, and welcome to another edition of The Zone Show. Now, in this Zone Show, we're going to be talking specifically about the time zone. But this Zone Show is a little bit different from other ones, because the tables have been turned on me today, and I'm being interviewed about my new book, Managing Time Mindfully, a practical guide to how we use, mindfulness for generating more time in our lives. And I'm being interviewed in this Zone Show by the wonderful Steve Poulterman. Hi, Steve.
Hey, how are you going, Tom? It's great to be here.
Lovely, and it's such an honour for me to have the tables turned as well. I love that. It happens very rarely, but thanks for stepping up to the plate as the Zone Show host today.
My pleasure. It's an honour to be invited. I think I've got some pretty big shoes to fill. but can I just start by saying having the opportunity to read this book, which the thing that's most amazing about it is, I get a bit scared about reading books because I feel like there's a lot of, I build it up a lot and I go, what if I don't finish this book fast enough? Which is quite hilarious. After reading the first couple of pages, I turned all my devices off and I went, you know what? I reckon I can kind of make time pause for this one. And I've never finished a book. It felt like it was about 10 minutes to finish the whole thing, which I know it wasn't, but it was one of the fastest, most amazing reads that I've had recently. So thank you for letting me dive into that.
Oh, that's good to hear.
So to dive in, I'm really keen to hear about where this book came from. Can you get started and maybe give us a little bit of a story around one of your, maybe your favorite experiences during your explorations with time?
Well, I think the main thing with time is that I've not been obsessed by it. I'm never wear a watch. I'm never late for anything. I'm always on time and always in time. And I guess the exploration started in my mid-40s when I started meditating. And my meditation experience, I think I mentioned in the book, is that one, I thought meditation was a waste of time and I was a busy guy and I wouldn't have 10 minutes to waste every day. But I discovered after learning to meditate that the days I meditated, I had better days. So that 10 minutes I spent in that me time, I got back in spades. I was luckier, I was healthier, I was more vibrant, I was more creative. But it was really when I started writing my first book, and my first book was a book of poetry called 100 Years of Ermyntrude. And when I got into the zone where I was writing, I noticed that time took on a rather ethereal quality. And as an engineer, I thought I ought to research this. So I started to read books on the latest theories of how the left and right brain works. And there's a great book by a guy called Ian McGilchrist called The Master and His Emissary. And he really turns upside down that notion that the left brain's logical and the right brain's creative. And it really appears now that the left brain sits inside space and time and the right brain sits everywhere else. And when people talk about left and right brain, right, it's the outer cortex, it's not the lower brain stems. Because when you get into the lower brain areas, into the neurology in the rest of our body, then time takes an even more strange quality on. But what I just studied was, and this is all very empirical, I've not had my head inside an MRI scan or anything, I noticed that if you meditate, stay in the meditative state and write, time elongates and stretches out, so you can get more things done in less time. And that's kind of where I guess that's the thesis started there, if you like.
I love it. Going on from that, I one of the things I found really interesting later on in the book, you actually talk about curveballs, and I want to ask you about managing curveballs a little later. But to start with, you were thrown a curveball before you'd even finished the book. Tell us about that and how that changed the process of writing this book.
Yeah, well, I had a lovely session with a lady called Joanna Penn. Joanna and I have known each other for years, and she's a very successful writer. And we kind of started our writing careers off around the same time. She writes in the kind of mainly in a fictional genre. And we had a session where I said, look, what is it that you're doing really successfully about your books that I'm not doing with mine? And she said, Tom, your books are great, but they're all over the place. Your interest goes over here and you write about this and you write about something else. Is that what's really good nowadays is to write a series of books. And I said, well, actually, the thing is, I've got loads of really good information about practical uses of mindfulness, and mindfulness is a great buzzword nowadays. So how about if I write a series of books? And because I can bend time, I went, I know what, I'll just write one a month because I can do that. So I wrote the first one in a month, in less than a month. And I was just about to write the second one in less than a month when a black Labrador called Henry ran slap bang into my knee and broke my leg. And so it sent me flying physically and metaphorically. And I realized at that point is that, I just needed, it was a message to slow me down. And so I'm still going to write them quite fast. I'm going to write them every 3 months, and it gives me the ability to write a bigger book. So I was planning to write quite a practical book about how you use mindfulness and time management. Effectively, what you see now is the middle of the book. I was going to write that book, but what I've done is added two bits to it, the start and the end, which are more philosophical, and they look at time as a thing and how we as humans have created and enslaved ourselves in time, and having done that, how we can unenslave ourselves. And time's a great thing because it meant that you and I turned up at the right time and we're in different time zones, so we could have this conversation. But also, when you're doing something practically or creatively, you can enslave yourself by it. And if you've got a deadline, you know what it's like as a creative. If you've got a deadline, the very deadline itself can actually dampen your creativity and throw you into all sorts of panic.
I think we've all felt that plenty of times. I know I do. Probably feels like every week, sometimes every day. So let's, there's stacks of really interesting kind of exercises that you take us through in the book. But before we dive into those sorts of things, what do we need to understand about time itself before we can try out some of your exercises to get more time?
Well, time, even though we can measure time very accurately, we can measure time to 10 to the minus 21 of a second at the moment, which is an amazing feat. And we've got clocks that are super, super accurate. Time is a very local thing. So a year is only a year if you're on planet Earth. If you're on the planet of Mars, a year is 2 years long. If you're a day is only a day if you're on the surface of the planet. If you're an astronaut in the International Space Station, a day is 90 minutes. So these time constants that we hold ourselves to are very local to us. Also, time only exists when there's an observer. And it only exists when you're counting it. So there's only one thing in the universe that beats to the second, and that's the thoughts of someone watching a clock. So if you don't watch a clock, and what I do is I'm very task-based. So I say, right, in this writing session, this chapter will emerge. And I start with one word, and at the end of it, the whole chapter is there. I might have a break. If I get stuck, I might go and do a walk. And there's loads of exercises you can do to energize left and right brains with nostril breathing and cross-crawling and mind mapping and all this sort of stuff. So if I get stuck, then it's generally because I need a break, and I go and do something, make a cup of tea or walk around the garden or something, or take the dogs out for a walk. And then basically when we look at tasks having to get done within a certain allocated sort of time, they tend to, and you get in that meditative state before you embark on the task will get done. And then if you extend that out to periods of a month or a season or a number of years, which I explain in the book. So, what I advocate is not being held to decades. I'll do this by the time I'm 30, or by the time I'm 40, or by the time I'm 50. But you run to groups of 7 years. So I say in the next 7 years, I will make this transformation in my life. It's easy to achieve all you dream of and more. So I know for a fact, I'm very, very confident, unless a whole gaggle of Labradors run into my legs next time I'm outdoors. And also the next book will be out in 3 months, and the one after that in 3 months. I know that for a fact, unless something strange happens. And that's not, it's not at all. I've not put myself under any stress to do that. It's actually quite comfortable, really. They won't be big books because I don't want people to spend a long time to read them. There'll be 20,000, 30,000 words. But by thinking of what we're going to do in tasks rather than, I've only got this number of hours to do it, we can free ourselves up from the tyranny of time. I guess that's a good title for a blog, isn't it? The tyranny of time.
I think so. That's got to be under in the show notes for sure. So thinking about overcoming the tyranny of time, tell us about your idea about using moon cycles to increase our productivity.
Well, the moon is a natural timekeeper. It's we've got two. There's only two times really that are fixed when you're on planet Earth. So seconds don't exist, minutes don't exist, hours don't exist, weeks don't exist, and months don't exist. They're all man-made, but they're good things because they allow us to keep to time with each other. But the day exists because that's the rotation of the Earth, and the year exists because that's the rotation of the Earth around the Sun. But the other time constant that we got is the Moon going around the Earth. And if you look at the metaphysics of it, it's thought that the position of the Moon affects our consciousness. And the police forces around the world do put more police on around full moons. This is kind of well known. Vintners plant in time with the moon. So it does have an effect. It has effects on our tides, obviously. And as we're 80% water, then it does have an effect on us too. But there could be a logical reason to use moon phase, which is just that it takes you through a sequence. So what I would do generally, from the new moon through to the full moon, I will plan. And from the full moon through to the new moon, I will act. But you can subdivide it into doing things in the moon quarters as well. And just that sort of moving out of this mode where you're acting all the time and you're doing things hoping to get some result gives you some structure in whatever you're working on. So when you've got a project which is about a month long, I call it a month, then it's a good idea to tune into the moon phase. So there's no accident that the first book in this series was published on a new moon. This book will be published on a new moon, and all the other books will be published on a new moon. And I even try and get the draft to my editor on the previous new moon as well, and it gives me a target to go to. And I guess having these targets, and they're soft targets as well, you can move plus or minus a day or two if things go awry, just gives you a focus. And so it works because the moon gives you a reminder of where you are in a cycle, or it works because the moon is affecting our consciousness.
I like it. That's interesting. Already, you know, it's already in the short amount of time that we've been talking, I'm hearing so many ideas about how, well, so much of what you talk about in this book is about stopping being reactionary to everything around you and living life in a way that feels good. And that's what really gelled with me. So I'd say for anybody listening, if you feel like you're reacting to everything around you, like I know I do a lot of the time, this book really has a lot of stuff to help with that. You're already talking about some of that stuff, which is cool. I want to now dive into one of my favorite little bits where you're talking about having one thought at a time. Can you tell us about that and how that can improve the way we live our lives?
Yeah, we don't think about thought a lot, do we? We wake up in the morning and thoughts start going, and then we go to sleep and thoughts stop. And while we're asleep, thoughts still do come in, but they come in very pictorially in the form of dreams. But there's a peculiar aspect of the human mind that we might not even think about, and that's that the normal human mind can only have one thought at a time. So if you think about the direction of a thought, you lose its content. And if you think about the content of a thought, you lose its direction. And this is because this is the same as Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, which is a quantum physics kind of concept where if you can't measure the speed and the position of an electron or any subatomic particle at one time, and thoughts have the same sort of nature. So if you're thinking about what you're having for supper tonight, or about a terrible conversation that you had yesterday that you regret, you'll lose focus on the now. Right? And so most people are naturally about 33% efficient because their thoughts are sort of ranging through the future, back to the past and back to the now again. You know, so that's kind of how we're pre-wired. And so the meditative state that I talk about, that I seed my day with, so I've meditated before we've had this conversation this morning. If you maintain that through your creative period, and I teach how to get into the meditative state with your eyes open, then what happens is you annul the inner chatter, that inner demon going on inside your head. And especially if, like, so you're a creative, so you might think, well, I'm writing these words, and your thoughts might go to, oh, no one's going to like them, or maybe I shouldn't say that because it might upset somebody. So if your thoughts start gravitating to that kind of inner dialogue, they're going to naturally come away from your creative flow.
Totally. And there's so much stuff. This really is a book for creative people through and through. Yeah, I saw creative people who are also entrepreneurs and all that, all those sorts of types. I saw an image the other day with like a graph of like the ups and downs of really, you know, being going from the highs and the lows constantly. And I think that's like such a big thing to overcome, which this book definitely talks about. There's a whole thing about being creatively uncreative in the book, which I loved because there's really resonated with me in stuff that I go through daily, being a creative person. Can you tell us about some of the things that us creatives do in being uncreative?
Yeah, well, when we do it, I always call it good news. It means that we're onto something good. And most of the time, what's in operation is a fear. So because we're maybe fearful of stepping forward, we invent loads of reasons to do everything else but the thing we should be doing. And the fears tend to be fear of ridicule, fear of the unknown, fear of success, even, would you believe? And so when you find yourself in that mode of procrastinating, then just pat yourself on the back and say, you know, what is it? What I'm afraid of here. Sometimes, though, it's because the timing's wrong. So sometimes it's the universe saying, actually, there's a better time for this. Sometimes it's because the framing's wrong as well. So you might be doing a project on a certain thing. Let's say you're doing an album, music album. You might be doing it as a rap album. Well, actually, you should be doing it as R&B or something like that, you know. And the universe just starts to say, look, this is all good stuff, but reframe it in a completely different genre and you'll have a lot more success. And one of the things I talk about in the book is that one of the influences on us that we don't recognize is our future us, the successful, magnificent version of us in the future that needs to get to being that person in the now, it can actually send messages back to us in the now. And we entangle with that person in the same way that we're entangled with the past version of us too. And a bit of a esoteric concept, but once you get your head into it and you start to form a relationship with the future you, you can take great guidance and you can find out that, hey, you should be going this way. And when you get stuck, the future you is a great person to tap into for a bit of guidance and direction.
I love it. I'm curious now, when have you used the future you recently to get better guidance?
I use the future you to write to. So what I do is I channel my future self who knows the words I haven't written yet. That sounded weird. So if you think about it, the version of us that we resonate mostly with is the version of us a second ago and a second into the future. And so, and because we've got the forward arrow of time in the illusion we call reality, we have this sense of a memory of what's gone past. Obviously, our memories might be slightly variable depending on what was happening at the time and how we're feeling right now. But also, future memories are also accessible. That's how we have light bulb moments. So we resonate very strongly with a version of us in a second from now and an hour from now and a month from now. So when I meditate, especially if I get stuck or I'm looking for the title for a chapter or something like that, I'll just ask my future me to tell me what it is. And magically, this stuff comes in. Now, it might be a figment of imagination, and it is imagination, but it really works, which is kind of strange.
I love it. I love it. I think, it's kind of, for me, it feels like just a way of tapping even further into that creative side and letting that turn into something that is that you just, your logical brain just wouldn't be able to do by itself.
Yeah, and I do this for clients as well, you know, because there is a collective consciousness we can tap into. I do ghostwriting for clients and I can write as them. And people have said, you sound more like me than me when you're writing, you know, so it's quite a trick. And these are all tricks of the imagination, but they're a lot of fun. But you can also, I've been on channeling courses and I know how to channel, virtually every entity. If I'm talking about, a mystic from the past, someone like Swedenborg or Steiner, then there's ways to tap into their consciousness and use them as guides.
Very cool. And you've mentioned tuning in there, which I feels really resonates with me. I like the part of the book where you're talking about dream time, making use of sleep. Here in Australia, we've got an amazing culture with the Aboriginals. They had the dream time. I remember in school we'd hear. We're very lucky actually to have heard a lot of their stories from the dream time, which were very magical in themselves. Tell us about your idea about making use of sleep and what we can do with our dream time.
Yeah. Now I've had some amazing dreams. And I got taught by somebody how to remember dreams. And the way you do that is that when you wake up, you spend a bit more time in that luxurious point between sleep and waking, and just let the dream percolate into your consciousness. But I learned also you could see the dream. So you could actually, say, I want some advice on something, or, whether it's a personal matter or something in business or a creative project, and you will dream something about it. But it will come in allegory. So the second part of it is that you have to then interpret that dream. And there's two fairly famous case studies. One is Paul McCartney dreamt the tune to Yesterday, and it was so vivid he thought, I must have heard it somewhere. So he wouldn't infringe copyright. He went and listened to all his albums and his records to make sure he hadn't heard it somewhere. And there was another guy called Kekulé, who was a Belgian organic chemist, and he wanted to work out the structure of benzene, and he knew it had six carbon atoms and six hydrogen atoms, and he couldn't work out how it could be put together. So he dreamt about this snake eating his tail, and benzene turned out to be a ring structure. From that, all organic chemistry came. And so dreams are great sources of information for us, and they can also work very well in a fictional context. If you're writing fiction, so you can actually dream up the next chapter and get the next chapters kind of read to you, which is quite amazing. And sometimes you get the whole chapter in this sort of story that you wouldn't have got if you were awake. And it's almost like when you're awake, again, that internal thought process gets in the way of the creativity, whereas when you're asleep, your mind is almost like a blank canvas that can be drawn on. And as we spend a third of our lives asleep and about half that time dreaming, apparently, it makes great sense to use that time to be creative.
I love it. How does that translate, do you think, to things we might do if we're thinking from the gut?
Well, I think in most people, the gut is dormant. You know, it's a mind center, which we don't tap into. Our heads are so loud that we overrule our gut, we overrule our heart. You know, I've done this, I'm sure you've done it. I said, well, I wished I'd trusted my gut on this, or I wished I'd followed my heart. We've all said that at some point. And these mind centers, from an evolutionary perspective, have been active for millions and millions of years. As our head and cortex got very loud, we've overwritten the sense impressions that come from us. And they don't have a language, they don't speak in language. They speak. The gut speaks in a yes or a no, and the heart speaks in a level. They don't see, they don't vision, they just sense. And one of the things, a great time saver when you're going to make a decision, let's say you've got two job offers, or, you know, should you use this book cover design or another book cover design? Should you use this editor? Should you go with this publisher or the other publisher? Sometimes your mind doesn't know which way to go, so you just have to ask your gut and ask it for a yes or a no. And if your gut says yes and your heart says I love it and your head thinks it's a good idea, it generally is a good idea. If, however, your gut gives you a no, what you can do is ask yourself what would have to change so it could turn into a yes. If your heart says, well, you know what, I'm a bit lukewarm about it, you can say, what would have to change so you'd be boiling hot? And this is quite a nice iterative process to go through. And when you do that, you never make a wrong decision.
I love it. I love it. So I mentioned before about curveballs. I find that one so interesting, just because this book is obviously so intrinsically linked to a giant curveball. Mm-hmm. We've got curveballs coming our way left, right, and center every day. How do you suggest we better handle them?
Well, curveballs are great. They should all be, all like all balls, they should be caught, because because there's a message in them, right? So the message for me in this book was just, you know, I know you can write a book fast, Tom, but slow down on this one. Just make it a bit more expansive than the book you were thinking of. And you won't, you're not a person to slow down, so we'll throw a Labrador at your knee, that'll slow you down. So that was kind of the way to see it. And in any adversity is opportunity. So if you're a creative and something comes your way, which is not ideal, right? Well, that's the idea. That's the inspiration for the next song. That's the inspiration for the next book. If you're an entrepreneur and there's a struggle and you can work out a way to get over that struggle, that's your next product and your next service. So in this kind of world, there's never any bad news. There's only learning. You know, take something really terrible that's happened with the terrorist attacks around the world at the moment. Well, it's a wake-up call that something really needs to be resolved. You know, some people are pretty annoyed about something, and other people are pretty annoyed that they're annoyed and doing some annoying things, right? So it's a wake-up call that, hey, we should really get together. We're on this spaceship Earth, revolving on its axis once every day and going around the sun once every year. And my personal mantra is that, you know, if we're stuck on this earth together, why don't we just all get along a bit better? Because it would just be a nicer place to be. And it is a heaven. We're in a very lucky place. So while we're sharing this ride on Spaceship Earth, this 500 million miles a year, let's all get on. And so if there is something not good, then let's try and resolve what it is.
Yeah, I feel that immensely. And it's interesting you're talking about a wake-up call, because in a lot of ways, my reading this book felt like a constant wake-up call for me. It was like, here are so many more things that I need to be mindful of. And as I've said before, they're all really easy ideas that I feel like I can, you know, play with, which I think is probably the best thing. It's like stuff that I was already playing with as I was reading the book and thinking about when I can implement that stuff. So there's definitely a wake-up call for me, this book. Now, in saying that, who did you write this book for?
I wrote it for busy mums who have got, like, the kids to get to school. They might be holding on down a job, and their time has been stolen from them. I wrote it for those people that go to work and say, I wish there was an eighth day in the week and a 25th hour in the day. And I wrote it for those people who want to enjoy life and actually savor every minute and every hour and every day they're spending on planet Earth. Yeah, so it's a multifaceted book. It's meant to be very simple and very practical. And I guess I wrote it for people who want to use their time not only to their advantage, but also so they can contribute back to the Earth. And one of the things I say in the book is that there's no such thing as a waste of time. You know, wasting time with someone you love watching a sunset is not a waste of time.
That sums it up really well. That was more of a curiosity than anything, because as I read the book, I'm like, oh my gosh, this book is for me. It is talking about all the things I'm doing that I need to adjust. But I just, you know, in thinking about that, I'm like, there must be so many different people in different situations who have similar experiences who will read the book and have the same feeling I had. Definitely one that has something for everybody who, as you say, everybody who needs to better invest their time. It's really cool. So towards the end, you talk about some experiences you've had in your life. What would be one of your most standout experiences in dealing with time?
Well, most of the book, as you say, is about how we can elongate time. So we get this sense that we get more things done in less time. But I've experienced time jumps. I've jumped backwards in time by a few seconds. I've jumped forwards in time by a few minutes. And I guess the weirdest thing that's happened to me that's being corroborated by another guest on The Zone Show, a guy called Randy Rogers, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes, is when you stop time, something strange happens. You levitate. And I did a very deep meditation with this lady, and I said, I feel really weird. She said, I'm not surprised. You've just levitated. And I thought it was a bit of a curious thing until I read a book a few years later, a book about physics that explains that when time stops, the force of gravity also stops. And so I just assumed that what must have happened is I jumped out of personal time completely, and then gravity decided to lose interest in me, which is kind of interesting. And then when I interviewed this guy, Randy Rogers, he had pretty much a similar experience. So one of the things that the last quarter of the book is about is a clarion call to readers to say, get in touch if you've had any weird experiences in time. And by the way, there's another fantastic guest on The Zone Show called PMH Atwater, and she's written a whole book on future memory, and she's on the show shortly. She's been on the show already. She's an expert in near-death experiences. And this book on future memory pretty much corroborates all that stuff I was talking about, is how you tune into your future self to get the words sent back in time. So I know I'm not the only person on the planet that's experienced weird things happening with time. And so so apart from getting everyone to make the most of their time, I don't mean that in a slave drivery kind of way. I mean that in, like, let's enjoy the time we got and enjoy the time we got together and maximize our time on the planet. Also, time, I think, is a variable feast. As I say, it needs an observer. So the state of the observer will affect the passage of time, the flow of time, whether it's going forwards, backwards, or stopping.
And, you're talking into that whole philosophy that you have about slowing down to speed up, which I think is so cool. You know, at the end of the day, we're in this world that just seems to be getting faster and faster and faster and faster. There's only so fast we can all go, but there is definitely a lot we can do. And I see it even more clearly after reading the book. There's a lot we can do to just create more time for ourselves.
Exactly. And that mantra, it was a lesson to me to slow down a bit, because even I was moving too fast, you know, so sometimes you have to eat your own words.
That's where all the best learnings come from, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Tom, it's been a privilege having let me kind of discuss the ideas in your book here, and thank you for letting me read something that I know is going to make a big difference to my life. You're an absolute inspiration, I would say, for anyone else out there, whether they're a creative person like me or really just anybody who either feels they're perhaps reacting too much to the world around them, or wants to maybe improve their productivity or the way that the way that they use their time, or even just tune into themselves a little better maybe if you feel like you just want to create more abundance around everything you're doing, this book is an absolute winner. Or maybe you just want to explore some weird experiences you've personally had with time, because obviously you might not be alone there. If there's anybody out there that's stopped time themselves, this one might help you feel like there is others out there who have had experiences too. It's an awesome read, and it's been amazing discussing some of these ideas with you, Tom.
That's brilliant. Well, thank you for spending the time. And can I also share with you is that I write about this stuff in the book, but also I've got a set of meditations that accompany the book that are free for readers of the book. And there's a meditation to start your day. There's a meditation to end your day where you can seed your dreams. And also there's a couple of meditations to help you get in the meditative state while you're in the middle of the day. And one of them specifically is called generating an interruption barrier, so you don't get people interrupting you while you're in the middle of things. So that's something that accompanies the book. So being an engineer and an empiricist and a pragmatist, I don't want to just write about things. I want people to actually experience this change of time. So that's a little bonus there.
That's awesome. I should have mentioned actually that all the practical little exercises throughout the book will be definitely something that I'll be diving into myself. I'll report back and let you know how they all go. But I thought that was really cool that it's not just read about this and learn about this stuff. It's like, here's how stuff works, and here's how you can actually get this stuff going in your life. I think that's really awesome.
Yeah, well, actually, there's also people that really want to get into. I've got a whole 10-week self-study course called Living Timefully, and I'm also now I've done this in the past, and I'm going to start again. I'm going to start running workshops on timefulness and also how you can heal with time as well. So if you want to become practitioners of this new art of timefulness, then that's something which I'm very keen to start doing, because there's some amazing things you can do with healing. So our body is a memory of traumas gone past, and there's ways that you can deal with the trauma in the past and it instantly heals in the present, which is just magical.
I love it. There's a lot we can all do for the world if we get more in tune with the way we spend our time, I think. So a lot of good that can be done. So sure. Cheers to you for writing the book for us.
Thank you. Thanks for reading it. Thanks for taking the time out to talk about it too.
My pleasure. It's been great.
Thanks so much for listening to The Zone Show. And for loads of books and resources on how to get in and stay in the zone, visit my website, www.tomevans.co.